We are very fortunate today. We have His Holiness Bhakti Vinod Swami Maharaj as, you know, giving our Bhagavatam class today. And please allow me to say a few words about Maharaj. Maharaj is a senior Vaishnav monk in the renounced order of Sannyas, a chemical engineering graduate from the National Institute of Technology at Trichy, India, with a soaring and colorful past, having won awards for most outstanding student cultural activities like drama, debate, and as best singer, rhythm guitarist at a national level. Right at the start of the lucrative career back in the 80s, inspired by the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, he summarily disengaged himself from worldly life to become a full-time missionary, spreading the wisdom of the ancient Vedas worldwide. Maharaj's focus is currently on outreach preaching, especially to the future of the world, our youth. He is prodigious, including delivering seminars, retreats, and satsangs to a wide array of targets in an engaging manner. Apart from overseeing many temples and major projects, Maharaj holds the following posts in ISKCON: as Deputy Governor Body Commissioner in ISKCON World Body, GBC Zonal Secretary in Kerala and West Tamil Nadu, India, Chairman of International Outreach Effort for the GBC, Member of Regional Governing Body India, Trustee Member of ISKCON India Bureau, Director of ISKCON Guruvayur Project, Director of Malayalam Division, the Bhakti Vedanta Book Trust, Director of Bhakti Vedanta Academy for Training and Education, Director of Turiya Academy and Legal Ministry of Assisting in the Legal Matters of the Societies. I once again say we are very fortunate to have Maharaj for giving us Bhagavatam class today. And Dandavat Pranam, Maharaj, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Are you there on the call, Maharaj?
Yes, Mataji, Maharaj is coming.
Okay, Mataji. Thank you so much. So we can chant Mataji till he is coming on the call. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram,
Hare Bol, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Dhanvat Pranam, all Guru Srila Prabhupada and all Guru Srila Gurudev. Thank you Maharaj for giving us your valuable association today. And you can take over the class, Maharaj. Thank you so much.
Who's Hare speaking?
This is Mamta Maharaj. Mamta from Charlotte.
Right. I am very happy to be here with all of you. Although it seems a little strange that I'm alone in this room with the Bhagavatam and I'm addressing people somewhere in cyberspace. I'm used to speaking with an audience in front of me. But however, we shall give it a good try.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udiravet. Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavatir Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 3, text, Chapter 4, text, text 3. Okay, Chapter 4, one second, yeah. Chapter 4, text 3. So I'm just going to recite the words and the word-to-word meaning, the translation and the purport. Tato vinihishvatsya sati vihayattam shokena roshena cha duyata hruda pitroragat straina vimudadhir grihan premnatmano yo ardham adhat satam priyah. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. Thereafter, Sati left her husband, Lord Shiva, who had given her half his body due to affection, breathing very heavily because of anger and bereavement. She went to the house of her father. This less intelligent act was due to her being a weak woman. Purport. According to the Vedic conception of family life, the husband gives half his body to his wife and the wife gives half of her body to her husband. In other words, a husband without a wife or a wife without a husband is incomplete. Vedic marital relationship existed between Lord Shiva and Sati. But sometimes due to her weakness, a woman becomes very much attracted by the members of her father's house, and this happened to Sati. In this verse, it is specifically mentioned that she wanted to leave such a great husband as Shiva because of her womanly weakness. In other words, womanly weakness exists even in the relationship between husband and wife. Generally, separation between husband and wife is due to womanly behavior. Divorce takes place due to womanly weakness. The best course for a woman is to abide by the orders of her husband. That makes family life very peaceful. Sometimes there may be misunderstandings between husband and wife, as found even in such an elevated family relationship as that of Sati and Lord Shiva. But a wife should not leave her husband's protection because of such a misunderstanding. If she does so, it is understood to be due to her womanly weakness. Om Tat Sat. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Chi Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Satitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruho Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sakitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamsya Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Yadvaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, and a good morning to all of you who are listening to this talk of mine. And I'm very happy to be here connected with all of you and to be able to render this little service of speaking from the Bhagavatam to all of you. This is such an instructive verse, especially the purport of Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I am well aware, and I am addressing many of you who are in a highly egalitarian society up here in the United States of America, in Charlotte and elsewhere. And I also know this is an extremely sensitive topic. And I know all of you are at the edge of your seats. You want to know what Maharaj has to say about this. The purport especially, it's got some very strong instructions on culturally based grahastha existence for success in your grahastha life and in human life. You must very carefully understand without any excessive emotion tilted on one side or the other, but use our intelligence to understand why Srila Prabhupada is saying something which he is anyway saying from the basis of what he has gathered in the writings of the previous acharyas, according to great personalities, according to cultural norms that exist, and according to the Vedic tradition. Many of it may look inconsistent and even irrelevant in the present times. But let's keep it aside. Let's keep outreach and preaching validities aside and all that relevance. But let's actually take the substance of what is being mentioned here. This is a very wonderful, poignant pastime and story with a lot of instructions for us, especially for grihasthas. Here, Sati is finally deciding to not listen to what her husband has mentioned. And she has got no ordinary husband, and she is no ordinary wife. Lord Shiva and Sati are the father and mother of the whole universe. Prabhupada explains that. Their behavior should always be exemplary. So here, Sati, she has decided, I cannot take this instruction, because she is so much overwhelmed by her womanly situation and her emotional feelings, her desires, which is very, very natural also. It's not that here in the Bhagavatam anything artificial is being described. A real life situation is being described. And even Sati gets overcome by all these womanly, emotional requirements to the extent that she is unable to follow the wonderful counsel given by Shiva, who is very sober, extremely intelligent, very fixed on Krishna consciousness. We heard earlier, you must have heard, Tattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam. Lord Shiva is saying how he is fixed in Vasudeva and how he is in the Vasudeva state of Shuddha Sattva and how he is always meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he is a very fixed Krishna conscious person, giving wise counsel to Sati and telling her, please don't go to your father's place. If you go to your father's place expecting the type of reception that you're expecting in all your simplicity, I understand you and your feelings. Oh, beautiful wife, you're going to face something very deadly up there. Because of my experience with people like your father, and with what happens in this world, in this material world, and with everything else that I know, I can foresee that you will be insulted. And you're going to feel horrible about it. And I very much think that you should not go. So Lord Shiva did not physically stop Sati from going. So he was relying on the fact that he would be able to convince Sati. So he gave her a whole advice after Sati told her it'll be so nice, it'll be such a festive atmosphere. All my relatives will come, my sisters will be there, my parents will be there, my brothers will be there, and so many things will be there. There's such a very good festival atmosphere, there'll be a social gathering, and lots of people will come through, and why I would miss on that? It's my father's house, and I must go, and you won't come because you have a relationship problem with my father. But then Lord Shiva reminded her, knowing fully well, you know, women get very attracted to a nice festival and their presence, you know, they come very well decked and nicely dressed, and they see other people also dressed, and it's a whole cultural festival. And women play such an important role in a cultural festival. They're like almost like the fulcrum of it, the cultural fulcrum inside. And their presence means a lot in society. They play a very, very pivotal role in a Krishna conscious society, in a Vedic society especially. Their presence, like I mentioned again, is very vital. And they also know that. And they become very happy in the company of relatives and in the festival and all these things. And they take active part in it. Prabhupada repeatedly said in several places, even in the Bhagavad Gita, he mentioned, even in India now, whenever there is a discourse on Bhagavad, Ramayana, Mahabharata, anything, hordes of women will land up there. They like it. They are much more pious, religious, and they have a bent of mind towards the type of a cultural disposition. So Sati was very much interested in not missing out on it. She just couldn't think that I would not be part of it and sit here with my husband while that big program is going on there in my father's house. So she couldn't take it. But her husband warned her and said that you will be insulted and you will even start thinking against me. Many things have happened to you. So he very soberly advised her. You see. And Sati could not see eye to eye with Lord Shiva on this. So here she is deciding, no, I have to go. I have to take that risk. I have to go anyway because all my relatives will be there and all these things are drawing me and pulling me. So she is deciding to go in this particular shloka. He is Lord Shiva. After having advised Sati, Sati is leaving. And later we will see that how Lord Shiva's associates accompany Sati because of the great desire of Lord Shiva. They knew and what Lord Shiva was feeling, they knew. So they actually, for security's sake, accompanied Mother Sati. And the story goes that she goes there and only her mother and sisters welcome her. Her father doesn't even look at her. And everybody else, because the father is not looking at her and respecting her, refused to respect her. So the whole lot of them did not respect her. And only her mother and sisters got up and embraced her and welcomed her, but she didn't like very much. Because she was interested in making sure that her father would respect her, which he did not. Most surprisingly to her. Then, of course, she gets very angry at that. And starts speaking against the sacrifice and against her father and the fact that he is envious of her husband, Shiva. And she denounces the whole sacrifice, denounces Daksha, her father, repeatedly, and then goes into self-immolation. The famous phrase that we use, Sati, came from that. And this way we know the story goes. But the point here is Sati not heeding the advice of her husband. And Prabhupada commenting on that and taking it further, extrapolating it and saying, this is the reason why divorces happen. And this is the reason why things can get disturbed within a grihastha situation. So, actually, Sati is in one sense right. I'm sure the women folk would also feel, are bechari, ghar mein jane ka hai, maa ko dekhne ka hai, pita ji ko dekhne ka hai, you have to go there and be nice to them. How can you be without? It's perfectly all right. And I'm sure the men will, in their stoic manner, fold their hands and sit down and said, I told you. And say that Shiva is definitely very sober and is giving a good advice and is not being heeded by his wife. So, points here that we should note, something that will be of very important point, I mean important discussion, moot point for discussion will be that she left her husband and went alone without her husband to her father's place after her husband has warned her not to do so. It's actually, first of all, inauspicious to not to get the blessings of your husband for things that you would do. Encouragement and the support is always needed. But sometimes women in modern times do not get the support even for Krishna consciousness. That's a different thing. Then the actions, you know, have to be in, shift the gears and do things maybe differently. But here we're speaking in a cultural setting. The cultural aspect is very important. It's not that we can very easily become Krishna conscious right from the beginning. We have to rely a lot on the cultural aspects. Prabhupada wanted this movement to be a cultural conquest. Culture is like the stepping stone to pure Krishna consciousness. Culture is like the fabric. Culture is like the warp and the weft out of which your whole social life is made. If people don't follow culture, then there is great weakness. Our Krishna consciousness actually rests on the strength of our culture. That is an important point we should note. And many times we have to subdue or subordinate our desires to cultural values. And that is good. That's how you become a civilized human being. You don't become a civilized human being by just professing civilization or professing that you're very civilized by your looks and by what you do alone. You should actually practice it sincerely. And you should know what to do and what not to do. Kim karmeti, kim akarmeti, kavyopyatra mohitaha. Tatte aham pravakshyami yajnyatva mokshayate ashubha. Krishna is saying what to do and what not to do. Even the greatest learned people get confused. So it's not an easy thing. When Draupadi was getting the stroke, Bhishma was bewildered what to do and what not to do. In fact, he didn't do anything. He didn't do anything. Even Bhishma got bewildered. It's not an easy thing to know what to do, what not to do. Therefore, we constantly need counsel. I don't know why sometimes people don't take counsel and act against. Because the good thing about counsel is the blame is on the person who counsels you. For a wife, it's very nice to say, you said it, I did it. And if she failed, she can always come back to her husband and say, you said it, and this is what happened. So many people in management, I know in ISKCON especially, I face people who have dumb obedience, I call it. You know, Bhaktisansari Thakur called them Dandavat Sishya. Good at paying obeisances and not carrying out the real order. Right? So here it is mentioned, Shiva in very sober state is actually saying, don't go. And she's not able to take that counsel. But if you simply take the counsel of the husband, whatever happens, it's his responsibility. Actually, a lot of intelligent females do that. They very coolly say, okay, whatever you say, whatever you say. And they keep on coming back with the problems and putting it on the husband. And they say, what shall I do now? What shall I do now? What shall I do now? And in this way, the husband realizes, I better outsource the capacity to decide to my wife. Because it looks like I'll have to take a lot of responsibility. Sometimes there is an excessive obedience also, there is a problem from the side of the husband. He keeps saying, no, you do what you want to do. No, no, I want to do what you say I should do. Karishye vachanam tava. Arjuna told Krishna, I'll do exactly like what you mentioned. When Krishna gave a choice to Arjuna, yate ichasi tata kuru. And Arjuna said, I have learned that I must do what you asked me to do. Karishye vachanam tava. Nashna moha smritir labda. My illusion is gone and I've understood that I should listen to you. Right? So when in the material world, in all these situations, we often get bewildered. What to do, what not to do. How to answer our deep emotional needs, our desires. Especially women can become highly emotional in such type of cultural situations. And their needs are often recognized and they cater to by mature husbands. But at the same time, they can tend to completely lose a direction and go away. Prabhupada calls it womanly weakness. And he says that womanly weakness is a reason for shattering a grihastha life. And he goes to the modern times, he's saying divorce is because of that. So that's a tipping point. So the point here is that when do we listen and when we don't listen? Bali Maharaj refused to listen to Shukracharya. In fact, that is spoken about a lot. Ekalavya did not follow the procedure and started using Dronacharya as his spiritual master, unbeknownst to Dronacharya, and reaped benefits in the underground, subtly, and captured the art. But Dronacharya came to him and exercised his power. You having accepted, I now ask you to listen to me. Give me your thumb. And in this way, you can never use the art that you learned in the wrong way. And Ekalavya actually subordinated himself to that. He became very obedient to Dronacharya. So these are all instances we can see how obedience is used and how disobedience creates a disadvantage and also an advantage. In Bali Maharaj's case, he decided that the right thing to do is to surrender to Vishnu who has come in front of me, not listen to Shukracharya. There was a sterling decision he made. And Krishna obviously helped him make the decision from within his heart. Because he had already washed the lotus feet of Vamana and already drunk the Charanamrita. He had already become purified. And now he could turn around to Shukracharya and said, you always told me that Vishnu is the top and everything should be offered to Vishnu. And you say he's come in front of me and I should not. Something is wrong with you. Right? At a key point he was able to decide. So the capacity to be able to understand kim karmeti, kim akarmeti is coming out of Krishna consciousness. A Krishna conscious person will always find it wise to listen to good counsel and abide by cultural norms. The cultural norm is that the superior dictates, you must listen. Rarely do you have a superior who dictates to you something that is against your Krishna consciousness. And if you think so, then you must quickly bring it to the light of that person. And if you still think he's not understood, then you must take advice from another person. And you must actually decide what to do and what not to do. That's very important. But in a grihastha setting, that is a little different. A husband, especially a husband who is Krishna conscious, an equivalent here, example is Lord Shiva, who has got your Krishna conscious interest at heart, is very rare actually. Most people don't get husbands who are chanting Hare Krishna, interested in spiritual progress, and taking care of the family in terms of keeping Krishna in the center of the family. It's a great boon. And to disobey that type of a person is definitely a great amount of womanly weakness. You can talk it out with the husband in this day and age. You can actually have a dialogue, a discussion, and talk it out for good understanding. And they can hope for the best. And if the husband is still not convinced, then I think from the purport years, from Prabhupada's advice, it's always better to fall in line for your own spiritual benefit. Unless it's some other thing and something very disturbing is happening, which others may not know or you know better, then you should seek higher counsel. But the point here is, expecting a wife or a husband expecting to be alone and successful, separated and successful. Husband and wife are united, it mentions here, half. Thereafter, Lord Shiva had given her half his body due to affection. So Prabhupada explains that a husband gives half his body to his wife and the wife gives half of her body to her husband. In other words, a husband without a wife or a wife without a husband is incomplete. So these are very important examples from the Bhagavatam. And this is a very beautiful story. And this is so relevant because it happens to us all the time, these challenges. And that's why Bhagavatam reading is so important and these purports of Prabhupada are so important. How we can actually solve the problem of life. It's a challenge. Sometimes it's so difficult to follow it because we're pushed very hard from inside. And the capacity to be able to overcome that comes from our deep Krishna consciousness, our mature Krishna consciousness. If we chant our japa nicely, if you read Srimad Bhagavatam, and if you're constantly thinking about your spiritual life and endeavoring, then Krishna gives you intelligence. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. This is a science, actually. It's not just a statement. Those who chant, those who willingly offer themselves in service to Krishna, and who deeply meditate on spiritual aspects of their life, they can understand when they are accosted with these type of situations in life, they can actually get a great amount of strength from their spiritual practices. Because making the right decision is very important at right times. Most of the time people are asking those type of questions. Whenever I go anywhere, they ask me how to do the right thing. Because devotees are very interested in doing the right thing. They want to be successful in their devotional life. They don't want to do the wrong things and get implicated. So the moot point here is disobedience. Madhvacharya said that for a wife, the husband is a guru. For the employer is the guru. For a citizen, the king is the guru. For a child, the father and mother are the guru. In this way, he drew in parallel that Devat Dvijak Gurur Prajna Pujanam. Krishna says that austerity of the body is to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Brahmanas, that is the Vaishnavas, and respectable people above you who are actually very instrumental in guiding you. They are all worshipable because they are all have all like guru status. Because they take the responsibility of guiding you. And that's not an easy responsibility. It's not a position to be enjoyed. Because it's such a responsible position that you will share the karma of the person whom you counsel. Prabhupada told us that the king shares 1/6 of the karma of the praja. So he better be directing them properly. And that's a mass. 1/6 is enough to finish you. What to speak of one person who is your wife or your husband and your karma is intertwined. What to speak of 1/6 of the praja of, say, Indian population. Huge. Look at that. And the world's population is 7 billion. 7 billion. And how the world is being led, all the leaders are taking it on their head. They don't know. Even if you take India, such a huge population. I don't know what's the population of India. It's actually 1.6 billion or something, if I remember right. 1.4 billion. 1.4 billion when the leaders take decision. You know, 1/6 of 1.4 billion. It's one hell of a karma that will come on your head. So don't think that these positions are very rosy. All positions of responsibility have to be executed responsibly. And a king, a head of the family, a husband, he would be interested in executing his responsibilities properly. What I am supposed to do as per Varnashrama Dharma, I must do. And so the do's and don'ts that he wants implemented. And that should be followed because it's for good. Right? The thing about disobedience, you know, very important. Especially disobedience of an authority who is almost like a spiritual master to you is condemned. Uttamas chintitam kuriyat proktakari tu madhyamaha adhamo ashraddhaya kuriyat akartau ucharitam pituhu. The Bhagavatam, it is mentioned, one who follows the guru, the authority, uttamas, he is uttama, simply by chintitam kuriyat. The authority doesn't even have to tell him. He immediately makes out this is what is needed. And he does it. He's uttama. He's uttama. You see, my Guru Maharaj used to mention that Tamal Krishna Maharaj was able to do that for Prabhupada. Just by one look at Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he would understand that Prabhupada needs water. Prabhupada needs a fan on. Open the windows. To be able to make out. You know, immediately do it. And that's why Prabhupada was very pleased. Because if you have a disciple who, even before you speak, understands what you need and what's your desire and executes it. Uttamas chintitam kuriyat. He does things by simply understanding, even before the authority speaks. Even before my father tells me I've done it. I've watered the, you know, lawns. I've cleaned the car. I've brushed the shoes. The father becomes very happy with the child. Wow. Proktakari tu madhyamaha. The second level is that person who does after he is told. After he is told. It's not definitely the high class one. But you tell, I will do. You don't tell, I don't do. You tell, I do. You don't tell, I don't do. Then the question people ask is, why can't you do even without me telling? Because you know you have to do. No, no, no. I want you to tell me, then I do. If you don't tell, I'm happy that you didn't tell me. And I don't have to do. That's a default setting. It's a conditioned soul. So they escape behind that. You tell me, whatever you tell me, I will do. Sometimes such people are a pain in the neck. Because you think that by now you should have understood what's necessary and you should do. No, no, you tell, I do. I'm very obedient to you. Proktakari tu madhyamah. Adhamo ashraddhaya kuriyat. The lowest is that person who without any interest and faith does after he is told. Oh gosh, I have to chant my 16 rounds and hang my bead back. Che, I wish I had not committed to this. I wish he had not told me to go and distribute books. Oh, I wish he had not been, che, because I am part of this. Anyway, let us do it. What to do? Like that. Ashraddhaya kuriyat, without interest doing. Akarta ucharitam pitu, then the person who does not do, don't talk about him, he is actually equal to stool. Bhagavatam says if he does not do, he completely disobeys me, he is equal to stool, stinky stool. He said don't talk about that person. Cultured persons will do at least one of these things. At least disinterestedly do. Minimum level of culture. So, not listening and not performing is actually not acceptable in respectable society, in a cultured society. But here is Sati doing that. She completely disobeys Shiva. And then the horrible things that she faces leads her to immolating herself and making Shiva angry. Then Veerabhadra is created, and then Daksha is beheaded, and then Daksha repents. Everybody is put into misery. Everybody is put into misery simply because the woman did not listen to her husband. So many things can happen. So many, because it's a cultural setting and it's got a domino effect. Many, many things happen. If one thing happens, so many things happen. So sometimes in a family, if the wife is not able to listen to the husband, or the husband is not understanding enough to understand the requirements of the wife, both vice versa, then a lot of problems can be created. That's why it's very important that the husband and the wife remain in great good understanding. It's so important that they have a perfect equation. It's not always easy to be perfect, but at least they have an equation that tilts this way, that way, and they adjust and take the impact on each other. And at least make sure that it's not transferred to anybody else. And actually they keep it within themselves. And that is a successful living, you know. That's successful living. Sometimes people live for long times. My father and mother lived married life for 54 years. And I used to wonder, after in Krishna consciousness, at that time I didn't understand what's happening. My mother got married when she was 14 years old, from a big family. I have 5 sisters and 2 brothers. So I would wonder at how they did it. You know, I can see that nowadays in Kali Yuga, we struggle a lot to maintain a small family, a nuclear family, mainly because of a lot of dissonance and a lot of lack of understanding. And that's because of lack of maturity and low threshold levels. This is culture. This is not something about rights and everything. If you're culturally advanced, then you'll have a very good understanding. And you're very sensitive to any cultural travesty. And immediately set it right. That's why in a human society, culture is so important. Everybody treads carefully on other people's desires and feelings and emotions. At the same time, they know what is to be expected, what is not to be expected. And why somebody is saying something. And why, if I didn't understand also, sometimes I know it is for my good and therefore I do. And, you know, lots of things happen inside. These are all exercises in culture, and sometimes it's difficult for us to do, but the more we exercise in the gym of the cultural background, the more strong we become in the cultural interrelationships. And the product of that is rich Krishna consciousness. Because we all struggle with executing pure Krishna consciousness, and we find something is missing between us, even inside the ISKCON society. We find something is missing. And Prabhupada wanted us cultural, things to be the backbone of a society. And that's very important. So this is an aspect of culture. And if that is adhered to, then great things can happen. The duties of a husband towards his wife, the duties of a wife towards the husband, the duties of a father towards the children and society, we all have all these duties. And Krishna consciousness does not mean we should give up all these things. And prematurely, with a haughty head, think that on your own you can practice Krishna consciousness. Our Krishna conscious success, personally, is very dependent on all the people whom we associate with. We are not going back to Godhead alone. It's a complete enterprise. We go back to Godhead together. We go back to Godhead together, and we have the responsibility of tagging everybody else together, especially if you're a grihastha. You can't try to renounce and run away unless you have actually perfected yourself culturally, Krishna consciously, right? So these are some important things that I thought that I should bring up, and maybe I can stop here for questions and answers. Om Tat Sat, Hare Krishna, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Hare Krishna Maharaj,
thank you so much for the wonderful class.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. Thank you so much for such a wonderful class. I just have one question that you were putting forward, that yes, the woman should always listen to her husband, and it's such a rare opportunity to get a husband, especially who is a Krishna conscious and is chanting 16 rounds. But I have, you know, with friends quite with me, that just want to seek a suggestion that those husbands who are not Krishna conscious, and the wife is a little bit inclined towards Krishna consciousness, but husband doesn't want her to go to such programs, to attend such programs, and so how should that family take up? The wife should still listen to her husband and should continue her Krishna consciousness, her own chanting within her, you know, room, within her home, or whether she should move out. So I just want a suggestion on that.
Well, I made a statement that this is an ideal cultural situation that this pastime is occurring in. And even there are problems. And we are discussing it in terms of the cultural disposition that prevailed or can prevail. But you're bringing about a question that is something like an outreach endeavor about preaching and about a situation where husband and wife in the modern world are not seeing eye to eye in terms of Krishna conscious practices. Well, this is very common, and I think some of you can answer this better than I could do. I never went through grihastha life, but I can understand from my experience that such things are very common, and education is the number one point that we should be offering. When the husband and wife, especially because they're very intimately related, due to which reason there's a lot of familiarity that creeps in, it's sometimes very difficult for the wife to convince the husband on such norms, because ideally speaking, it's the husband who should be giving the instructions like this. The converse is sometimes an uphill task for the wife to do. And if it hurts, especially the false ego of the husband, then things become very complicated. And all women know that men have a big balloon of a false ego, and which can very easily burst with the prick of a needle. So they are very wary about it, and they play around it and make sure that they're not, you know, touching them on the wrong side. So what to speak about a non-Krishna conscious husband? Even Krishna conscious husbands have those type of problems. So I'm sure that that will be there. So sensitive to that, the wives should not rub the non-Krishna conscious husband, first of all, in the wrong sense. They have to be highly diplomatic and full consideration of the design. We all have a design. The female has a design. The man has a design. In fact, yesterday, I had a more heavy shloka to speak on. Bir Krishna Maharaj, when I went to the Hillsborough Temple, as soon as he came to today's Bhagavatam class, you have a real heavy shloka to speak on. I asked him that, did you particularly pick this on? No, it had so happened in sequence. And that was even worse. It was about Urvashi, you know, telling Pururava about how women are like this, like that. They're cunning, they're cruel, they're very, very heavy things. And then I was mentioning that this is the last thing I would like to speak on my visit to Hillsborough. But the point is that these are cultural norms that we are talking about. And when people don't have culture, then you have to bring them into speed by educating them culturally. That's one way of doing it. That'll take quite some time. But the important, the simple things in relationship that you could do is the wife could actually make it look like, diplomatically, make it look like she's actually taking the permission of husband to do something which he may not be very much interested in doing. But I'm sure women know how to do that. But they make the mistake of rising up and challenging the husband in some way, that you are inferior to me because I am able to do it and you don't do it. And this is the truth and you should be doing it. They read up all Prabhupada's books and get into arguments here and there. They come and map it flat on the husband. They make a mess. Same thing they do with the kids also. The kids, they all are talking about, instantly become pure devotees of the Lord. And then that's very hard. And a husband may actually be a nice man. And he may be a person who is potentially capable of becoming Krishna conscious. But many times it gets spoiled by the way he's presented to Krishna consciousness. So some of them survive that and still become devotees later. In spite of my wife having made a wrong, blatant presentation of Krishna consciousness to me, I still managed to survive that, and now we are better situated. That's Krishna's blessing. But initially, I think people make mistakes. So you have to check whether that is a type of mistake, or if you find that the husband is a very fanatic person and all that, then that's a different ball game that you have to play. Sometimes the wife chant Hare Krishna without the husband knowing it. Because the husband is anyway going to leave home. Then she does her worship, she does chant Hare Krishna, offers the food, everything. I know of many people who do that. And without telling anything to husband to irritate him. Because after all, you're not doing anything wrong. I mean, you're not having some crazy thing going on. You're just worshipping the Lord. And if you feel that he may get upset, some people don't say it. Don't mention it. Fine. So, I'm not able to advise exactly what the situation is. According to the situation, you should tailor-make the solution. We don't know what type of a husband is, a fanatic person, or is a very self-righteous person, or is a pious man, and is capable of, you know, reasoning with different folks, different strokes. Accordingly, we can train the wife to deal with the situation. So these are general guidelines I can give to the general question you've asked. For specific guidelines, you can speak to your local counselor. Right. Any other questions?
Thank you so much, Maharaj. I really appreciate your answer. And yes, I got the opportunity to hear yesterday class that you gave in Hillsboro. The verse was really tough, but I must say that you handled it so perfectly. So thank you so much for your visit to North Carolina. And looking forward for more of your association. Hare Krishna.
Hare Bol, Mataji, who are you?
Prabhu, my name is Kirti Rasindri Dasi. I am from Cary, Morrisville area, and I heard your classes. 2 days I was present when you were personally here and gave wonderful seminar. So.
Okay. Nice to meet you. Hare Bol.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Dandavat Pranams, all glories to Prabhupada. Maharaj, I have one question. From the beginning of this pastime of Daksha and Shiva, I've been thinking about this. So Lord Shiva was not offering obeisances when Daksha had entered the arena, and which made Daksha think that it was insulting for him. So now my question is, wasn't Lord Shiva supposed to be offering obeisances to his father-in-law? That is my first question. Because I have read in Bhagavatam recently that when Krishna was leaving Hastinapur, he offered obeisances to Yudhishthir, though he is younger than him, but because he is a king. So because of the position, he offered obeisances, Lord Krishna. And the second question I have is, even if Shiva was in trance because he was meditating on Lord Krishna and that's why he couldn't offer obeisances or pranams to Daksha, after he realized that he offended Daksha, we are told that whenever a Vaishnava is offended without our knowledge, we are supposed to go and ask them to pardon us. So that is my second question. And my third question is, you started off the lecture saying that Mother Parvati is an exemplary wife and she is not an ordinary wife. So how come she got trapped into this attraction of going into this get-together of the family despite her husband telling her?
Well, you have that's a stream of questions together. Let me try to analyze them one by one. I did know some vague answer towards why Lord Shiva did not pay obeisances. But right now I didn't have time to look up anything. I just read the verse I'm going to speak on today, maybe 10-15 minutes before I came here. I wish I would have been able to make some reference to that. I know that somewhere there is some mention about it. But generally speaking, predictable, normal behavior is not always expected from those who are powerfully oriented. Teji yasam na doshaya. In Bhagavatam, you will see that Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami's question, there is no fault in those who are powerful. So therefore, it's mentioned that Krishna should not be seen as a person whom he can find fault with. Even if certain cultural norms are broken, because such personalities are beyond any faults. That is explained by Shukadeva Goswami. This is the one answer that I can immediately think of. The behavior of powerful, great personalities is unpredictable. And sometimes it may look like it is not socially correct or culturally correct. But great persons know that that should not be taken into account that way. Actually, all these pastimes become so interesting because there is unpredictable behavior. Otherwise, it will all be like Hitler's society. Hail Hitler. Everybody will do exactly what you expect them to do. Left, right, they'll march and raise their hands and completely be doing certain types of things. And we'll have nothing much to talk about. But it becomes interesting because there are times and places when transcendence and transcendental behavior is exhibited. And that is always beyond any normal behavior that we can expect. Now, this is a general statement that I make first before settling down to something specific. Both Sati's behavior in not listening to her husband, although she is an exemplary wife and a great demigoddess, and Lord Shiva's not paying obeisances, both of them, husband and wife, have done things that are not normal. But the first general answer is, we don't imitate the actions of great personalities. We only follow their instructions. That is, you know, Prabhupada has very distinctly spoken about Anusharan and all that. So that's one thing that we should know. We can't immediately try to equate ourselves in our action, in our intention, and put that into context here. No. We should understand why especially Lord Shiva behaved like that. He didn't pay obeisances to Daksha. That's it. He didn't. And his not doing is not to be thought of as having an intention to disrespect Daksha. That's not true. That's not at all true. Because we know about Lord Shiva being extremely sober. And he is one of the demigods for whom the sacrifices are being done. And what the Sati goes there and sees is that that portion of the sacrifice is not being attributed to Lord Shiva. That's when she became very angry. That is great disrespect. Even if Lord Shiva does not offer obeisances to Daksha, is not so much of an offense or a cultural travesty, as much as Daksha not offering portion of the sacrifice to Lord Shiva. Because Daksha is not in that position as Lord Shiva. Definitely Lord Shiva occupies a much higher spiritual position and much higher material position too. And added to that, he is the father-in-law, he's the son-in-law of Daksha. Right? So, this is a question of certain things in terms of positions and respect offered, the culture of respect. You mentioned, gave the example of Krishna paying respects to Yudhishthira as a king. And Krishna similarly embraced Arjuna and Bhima in respect. And Nakul Sahadev came and paid obeisances to Krishna, and he accepted their obeisances. Simultaneously, he did all these things. To different people, he did differently. Respectful behavior, cultural norm is like that. So if Lord Shiva did not offer obeisances, I would say it's not a great mistake, because he has that position. And if at all he did offer respect, it will always be for him to stand out as an example, because yadyadacharati sreshtas tatta teveta rojanaha. He is doing that because other people are watching and they will imitate. But effectively, if he didn't, he's not in the wrong. It's not in the wrong. You know, Raghunath Maharaj, while in Tirupati, once had gone to the GBC meetings and we were together, and then as soon as he saw me, he paid obeisances. While I was paying obeisance, he paid me obeisance. I said, Maharaj, you don't have to do that. I'm just paying obeisance to you, seeking your blessings. He got up and said that, I don't have to chant Hare Krishna also. That was a very powerful statement, he said. In our society, we have to do these things. Is without telling me, he said. That must be his humility. That must be also the fact that he wanted to model how you should respect a sannyasi. Although I'm a pipsqueak of a small, tiny sannyasi, not worth anything, still he said that we should do that. So even if he didn't do that, nobody's going to say anything wrong, neither me nor anybody else. But he still did it. So Daksha, even if he was not given an obeisance by Lord Shiva, he's still correct, because his position was like that. And Daksha need not expect that respect on that level. Right? So this is my brief analysis of what you said, of both Sati and Lord Shiva. We should not imitate. We should only understand the context and the intention and carry on our life properly. I hope I've been able to capture some of the things that you mentioned in a detailed question.
Yes, Maharaj, definitely. I understood that now. We should not question, especially when we are talking or dealing with roles that are really high positions. So we should not take them as normal roles or normal behavior. I get that point. Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Thank you. Yes, sir. I have a question. I want your this explanation very, very wonderful. I have a comment and I want your explanation a little bit. The question which is regarding Mataji's question. Can I make one comment, Maharaj?
Yeah.
Now, asking the question, she thinks that Daksha is a Vaishnava. And so Vaishnava, in his behavior, he always gives the benefit of doubt to the other person. So Daksha's behavior is not exemplary as a Vaishnava. So the conflict of interest comes when we ask the question, when we think that Daksha is a Vaishnava and he is the father-in-law of Lord Shiva, and he is not acknowledging the position of Lord Shiva. So the fault is on Daksha's part. And if we think, so what we idealize, do we want to become like Daksha in our position, or we as a Vaishnava want to give the benefit of doubt to the other devotee or other Vaishnava, to seeing others as devotees and not thinking so much of myself as I am, how great I am. along that line, we can, because this Bhagavatam gives us so much instructions, what to follow and what to idealize, and accordingly we can adjust the situation. Could you elaborate on that point?
Well, thank you very much for bringing that interesting angle inside. Yeah, true. You see, we are dealing with Krishna consciousness, Vaishnava behavior, and we are dealing with persons who are managers of the cosmos, demigods. They are charged with the responsibility of holding power, controlling, and managing affairs for Krishna. At the same time, they are also interested in advancing themselves in Krishna consciousness, let's presume. So this is a strange combination, actually. It's a very challenging combination. It happens in ISKCON too. Prabhupada's society, which he has crafted for spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, is so precious to the whole parampara, to Srila Prabhupada. He took so much pains to establish it. Similarly, we have duties and we have roles to play in that. At the same time, personally, we are interested in our own advancement in Krishna consciousness, along with those others who are dependent on us. So sometimes these conflicts of interest do arise, and you may abandon one for the other with good judgment or with whatever judgment you have. So you made a right point saying that we don't have to bother so much about Daksha as we need to bother about Lord Shiva, because Daksha may not be so much of a Vaishnava, you may say. But actually all the demigods are, Prabhupada mentioned, they are all devotees of the Lord. They are all inclined towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which in one sense, very important for us to know that they are devotees. But their efforts are completely colored with their material desires. And therefore, these type of actions come out from them sometimes. You know, insulting Lord Shiva was very offensive to Lord Shiva. That is what stands out in Daksha's behavior. Daksha was no doubt offensive to Lord Shiva because of many reasons, whatever. Right? So, that type of thing we shouldn't encourage. So, Vaishnavas will naturally take the side of Lord Shiva and may not take the side of Daksha. But some materialistic persons who are Karmakandi may take the side of Daksha and argue against. In fact, in Daksha's encounter with Narada Muni, that argument can be seen. Narada Muni went and accosted Daksha with great boldness after having liberated two batches of his thousands of kids, his children. And he went and accosted, went and stood in front of Daksha, and Daksha with trembling lips, you know, pronounced a curse on Narada Muni. And he said, "In what way are you a holy man wearing saffron cloth? I am the holy man, not you." Right? It was a whole discussion. It's a very powerful discussion. Many times devotees get into this type of a situation. That whether it is Krishna consciousness values that we should uphold or the Varnashrama Dharma values that we should uphold and cultural values that we should uphold, which we should give precedence to. These are very important discussions. So if you get into this discussion, it's very deep, but on the surface of it, you're right in what you're saying, that we should pay less importance to what Daksha did and more importance to what Lord Shiva did. And that would be important for us to charter our course as devotees.
Wonderful, Maharaj. Very, very wonderful explanation. I learned this point because once Gauranga Das, he said on this point, he said that because we have, I am very fragile, I am very vulnerable to many vices. And so when we have Vaishnava behavior, we have to be conscious that we always give the benefit of doubt to the other devotee, that he doesn't have wrong intention even for doing what may not be exemplary. But when I think of myself, I have to be extra careful how I act, because it could have repercussions, you know, like that.
Hare Krishna. Yes. Thank you. Okay. Any other question? Okay, if there's no other question, I'll take leave of all of you. Thank you for your interest in Krishna consciousness, and thank you for your deeply inquiring about the Bhagavat, and I'm happy to be of some service to you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.